so afraid of dying. Before I dry the tears she's crying, before I watch your seabirds flying in the sun at Galveston, at Galveston.
The guitar man, who's gonna steal the show? You know, baby, it's the guitar man. He can make you love, he can make you cry. He will bring you down and he'll get you high. Something keeps him going miles and miles a day. Find another place to play. Night after night, you treat you right, baby, it's the guitar man. Who's on the radio? You go listen to the guitar man. Something keeps him drifting miles and miles away, searching for the songs to play. Then you listen to the music and you like to sing along. You want to get the meaning out of each and every song. Then you find yourself a message and some words to call your own and take them home. Begin to flicker and the sound is getting dim. The voice begins to falter and the crowds are getting thin. But he never seems to notice, he's just got to find another place to play. We'll be right back.
Here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 59 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-40s. Then tomorrow, partly cloudy with a high in the upper 60s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 50s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
Good afternoon. Welcome to your coronavirus update from the Recording Library of West Texas for Monday, February 1st, 2021. I'm Michael. Coming up in our program today, here are these articles. White House concerned providers are holding back doses. Biden administration to keep following two-dose schedule for COVID-19 vaccines. More than 470 cases of concerning variants in the U.S., CDC reports. Production to ramp up for first fully at-home COVID-19 test authorized in the U.S. Moderna says no data on how much protection a single COVID-19 dose provides. Fewer than 10 million Johnson & Johnson vaccine doses would be available in coming weeks, health officials said. GOP senators will meet President Biden on Monday to discuss coronavirus relief plan. Progress in the fight against the coronavirus is coming, but Texas is a long way from herd immunity. Pain relief medications like Tylenol and Advil are perfectly fine for COVID-19 vaccine after effects, experts say. COVID-19 masks, which mask is best for you, and when to use it. Here's why COVID-19 vaccine side effects are a sign your body is working. And millions of COVID-19 survivors have lost the sense of smell and taste. Will they come back? Not even researchers know. First, we'll check the numbers. From the Texas Department of Health and Human Services for Ector County, confirmed cases, 6,976. Probable cases, 6,551. Fatalities, 295. Estimated active cases, 1,429. Estimated recovered, 11,803. Midland County, confirmed cases, 15,341. Fatalities, 215. Estimated active cases, 2,429. Estimated recovered, 12,697. from the Texas Tribune. COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations decreasing after record highs earlier this month. Average new cases in Texas decreased by 970 cases compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On January 31st, 9,903 new confirmed cases and 1,252 probable cases were reported. Hospitalizations decreased by 1,679 patients compared with a week ago. As of January 31st, 11,220 Texans are hospitalized for the coronavirus, and average new deaths decreased by 16 deaths compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On January 31st, 171 new deaths were reported. The United States reported 110,470 new COVID cases and 1,789 virus-related deaths Sunday, according to Johns Hopkins University's tally of cases. In total, the U.S. has reported at least 26,185,355 cases of coronavirus, including 441,319 deaths, according to JHU. Vaccines. At least 49,933,250 COVID-19 vaccine doses have been distributed, and at least 31,123,299 shots administered, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. January was by far the deadliest month of the pandemic in the U.S., with more than 95,000 COVID-19 deaths reported. And now we'll move on to our articles. White House concerned providers are holding back doses, from CNN's Betsy Klein. The Biden administration touted progress in COVID-19 vaccine doses being administered, but expressed concern that healthcare providers could essentially be hoarding second doses of vaccine that could be administered in real time, warning that that should not happen. "We expect the efficacy of doses being administered will steadily improve. On January 20th, states had administered 46% of their inventory. Today, that number is 62%. We're focused on this every hour of every day," White House COVID-19 senior advisor Andy Slavitt said at Monday's virtual press meeting. But Slavitt cautioned there is concern that providers, because of a lack of predictability on supply, are holding back available doses. "There's another thing going on that I want to alert people to, particularly the nation's providers. We believe that some healthcare providers are regularly holding back doses that are intended as first doses, and instead keeping them in reserve for second doses for patients. We want to be clear that we understand why healthcare providers have done that, but that it does not need to happen and should not happen," he said. Slavitt suggested that in some cases, patients' appointments for a first dose are being canceled, and conveyed understanding, but urgency in getting first doses out as quickly as possible. "We completely understand that this has been a direct result of the lack of predictability many states and providers have had regarding how many doses they would receive. That's one reason why last week we announced that the federal government will be providing a continual 3-week window in the vaccines that will be shipped. With this action, states and vaccine providers will more rapidly use their first doses to vaccinate as many as people as quickly and equitably as possible. Because they now have the predictability that the second dose will be there when the time comes," he added. Biden administration to keep following 2-dose schedule for COVID-19 vaccines, from CNN's Jacqueline Howard. "It is still recommended for people to get their second dose of COVID-19 vaccine on time," Dr. Rochelle Walensky, director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, said during a press house briefing, a White House briefing on Monday. "Until we have further data," Walensky said, "people should continue to follow the data from trials by continuing the schedule of receiving 2 doses 21 days apart from the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine and 28 days apart for the Moderna vaccine. The policy is that we certainly want everyone who gets a first dose to get their second dose," Dr. Anthony Fauci, chief medical office advisor to President Biden and director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, said during Monday's briefing. "The first priority will always be to get the people who have gotten their first doses to get their second doses," Fauci said. "A dose that's available is going to go into someone's arm. If a person is ready for their second dose, that person will be prioritized." More than 470 cases of concerning variants in the U.S., CDC reports, from CNN's Michael Nettleman. A total of 471 cases of coronavirus strains, first spotted in the U.K., South Africa, and Brazil, have been reported in at least 32 U.S. states, according to data posted late Sunday by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The vast majority of the cases, 467, are the more contagious variant known as B117, which was first detected in the UK. These include 147 cases in Florida, 113 in California, 42 in New York, and 22 in Michigan. The rest have fewer than 20 cases each. In addition, there are three U.S. cases of a strain initially seen in South Africa called B1351, two in South Carolina and one in Maryland. Last week, Minnesota health officials reported one case of the P1 strain first linked to Brazil. CDC says this does not represent the total number of such cases circulating in the U.S., but rather just those that have been found by analyzing positive samples. The agency cautions that its numbers may not immediately match those of state and local health departments. Production to ramp up for first fully at-home COVID-19 test authorized in the U.S. from CNN's Jacqueline Howard. The Biden administration announced the U.S. Department of Defense and U.S. Department of Health and Human Services are working with Australian company Illum to provide more of its fully at-home COVID-19 tests to the United States. Illum has been ramping up manufacturing and will ship 100,000 test kits per month to the U.S. from February through July. Andy Slavitt, the senior Biden White House advisor for COVID response, said during a White House briefing on Monday. Slavitt said the tests can detect COVID-19 with 95% accuracy within roughly 15 minutes. Moderna says no data on how much protection a single COVID-19 vaccine dose provides, from CNN's Naomi Thomas. Moderna President Dr. Stephen Hoge said Monday the company is focused on vaccine dosing data it has, and that the data says two doses is what works. He made the comments a day after Michael Osterholm, director of the Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy at the University of Minnesota, told NBC's Meet the Press that as many people as possible over the age of 65 should be given the first dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. Osterholm said this to respond to a possible surge in the next 6 to 14 weeks caused by the coronavirus variant first identified in the United Kingdom. Such a strategy could delay second shots of the vaccine. When asked for his thoughts on this strategy, Hoge told Good Morning America, "At this point, as a scientist and physician, I focus really on what the data says, and the data we have from our clinical trials shows that two doses is excellent, very good at protecting against COVID-19, and ultimately, that's the only regimen that we've really studied." Hoge said it's possible that one dose would provide some benefit, but we really just don't have any data to prove that at this point. At Moderna, we try to stick to the data and the science, what we have, he continued, adding that public health officials have complicated choices to make about how to protect as many people as possible when there are limited vaccine supplies. Our responsibility as a company is to stick to the data and make as many doses as we can available, Hoge said. Fewer than 10 million Johnson & Johnson vaccine doses would be available in coming weeks, health official says, from CNN's Caitlin Collins. Johnson & Johnson would have fewer than 10 million vaccine doses available if the U.S. Food and Drug Administration authorizes it for emergency use in the coming weeks, a federal health official tells CNN. The official said the number of doses available would be in the single-digit millions, but that number would ramp up to 20 or 30 million doses by April. Johnson & Johnson's single-shot COVID-19 vaccine was shown to be 66% effective in preventing moderate and severe disease in a global Phase 3 trial, but 85% effective against severe disease, the company announced Friday. The vaccine was 72% effective against moderate and severe disease in the U.S. CNN has reached out to Johnson & Johnson for comment. GOP senators will will meet President Biden on Monday to discuss coronavirus relief plan, from CNN's Manu Raju. A group of Republican senators will meet U.S. President Joe Biden on Monday afternoon to discuss an alternative coronavirus economic relief plan they proposed to the White House on Sunday, according to a joint statement from those legislators. "We appreciate the president's quick response to our letter, and we are pleased to accept his invitation to the White House tomorrow afternoon to discuss the path forward for the sixth bipartisan COVID-19 relief package," the 10 senators said in the statement. The White House said Sunday that Biden had spoken to Senator Susan Collins, one of the 10 senators, and invited her and the others to meet. The Republican senators are planning to unveil a roughly $600 billion COVID-19 relief package, which is a counterproposal to Biden's $1.9 trillion plan. The counterproposal includes a total of $160 billion for vaccine development and distribution, testing and tracing, and treatment and supplies, including the production and deployment of personal protective equipment. A new round of direct payments for families who need assistance the most, an extension of the enhanced federal unemployment benefits at the current level, and $4 billion to bolster behavioral health and substance abuse. Louisiana Senator Bill Cassidy, one of the Republicans who signed the letter, told Fox News on Sunday that the GOP plan includes payments starting at $1,000, an amount lower than the $1,400 Biden's plan provides for, that would decrease depending on an individual's income level. COVID-19 hospitalizations drop, but January has been the deadliest month of the pandemic, from CNN's Christina Maxouris and Holly Yan. For the first time in almost 2 months, fewer than 100,000 Americans are hospitalized for COVID-19. The United States on Sunday reported 95,013 COVID-19 hospitalizations, according to data from the COVID Tracking Project, and 97,561 patients were hospitalized Saturday. The last time the number was below 100,000 was December 1st. Yet the 7-day average of new cases is still about the same as it was December 1st. Even worse, the average number of daily deaths is more than double what it was then. January has been by far the deadliest month of the pandemic. At least 95,245 people died from COVID-19 in January, surpassing December's total of 77,486 deaths, according to Johns Hopkins University. Right now, it's the worst of possible worlds. It's the winter, it's getting cold out, people are together more. There's still a critical number of people in the United States who don't wear masks, who don't social distance, said Dr. Paul Offit, a member of the Food and Drug Administration's Vaccine Advisory Committee. "I think the next 6 weeks or 2 months are going to be rough. I think we could have another 100,000 or 150,000 deaths." He's not alone in that prediction. About 120,000 more Americans could die from COVID-19 over the next 2 months, according to the University of Washington's Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation. So health experts are urging all Americans to double down on wearing masks and keeping their distance from others. And while vaccine makers and officials scramble to get more Americans vaccinated, they're racing against the spread of highly contagious strains of coronavirus that are now in the U.S. Now from the Texas Tribune. "Progress in the fight against the coronavirus is coming, but Texas is a long way from herd immunity," by Karen Brooks Harper and Anna Canizales, published February 1st. The mythic idea of herd immunity from COVID-19 and the long journey back to normal may be out of reach for Texas anytime soon, state officials and medical experts say. But while it remains the ultimate goal, they said it isn't necessary to begin stemming some of the pandemic's devastating effects in the state. The state's high percentage of residents under 18, most of whom aren't approved for the vaccine, combined with those who can't or won't take it for other reasons, means that the state will struggle to immunize enough Texans to halt the chain of transmission and indirectly protect people who are not immune, experts said. In Texas, hitting the 70 to 80% level that experts estimate is needed would mean vaccinating some 22 million people, or nearly 100% of adults in the state, according to census numbers. We do not know when or if Texas will reach herd immunity through vaccination, Chief State Epidemiologist Dr. Jennifer Shufford told the Texas Tribune in an emailed statement. The large proportion of people that are under 18 years old in Texas will impact our ability to reach herd immunity. But vaccination will begin paying dividends before the state approaches herd immunity because fewer people will end up hospitalized with severe COVID-19 cases, and the state expects that increasing vaccinations will mean less transmission of the virus, health officials said. Health experts define herd immunity as the minimum portion of the population that must achieve immunity before society consider the virus defeated, even if it's not eradicated, and return to pre-pandemic lifestyles before the economy shows robust recovery and before the state fair of Texas and large weddings and birthday parties can happen. In the case of COVID-19, however, even reaching that 70 to 80% benchmark should be celebrated cautiously until more is known about how long a vaccine's immunity might last, said Dr. Nikhil Biani, infectious disease expert at Texas Health Harris Methodist Hospital Alliance. And now this is from USA Today. Pain relief medications like Tylenol and Advil are perfectly fine for COVID-19 vaccine after effects, experts say, by Adriana Rodriguez, published January 29th. Avoid pain relief medications just before getting the COVID-19 vaccine, but they are perfectly fine to take after, experts say. Headache, fever, body aches, and chills. While these are completely normal side effects of the COVID-19 vaccine, and a good sign your immune system is working, they can be unpleasant. To minimize the discomfort, some Americans may turn to pain relievers, such as acetaminophen or ibuprofen. Others worry those medications could blunt the effectiveness of the vaccine. Studies on the subject are sparse and inconsistent, but the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the World Health Organization recommend against the preventative use of pain relievers, though they allow them if symptoms develop after. In a study published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Virology, researchers found non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, NSAIDs, such as ibuprofen, can reduce the production of antibodies and affect other aspects of the immune response to SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19. Researchers said the study's results raised the possibility that pain relievers such as ibuprofen could alter the immune response to the COVID-19 vaccine. Dr. Colleen Kelly, an associate professor of medicine at Emory University School of Medicine, who was not affiliated with the study, speculates that an altered response could be caused by reducing inflammation triggered by the immune system. The immune system generates a response through controlled inflammation. Pain relievers can reduce the production of inflammatory mediators, she said. So this is the potential mechanism for a reduced immune response to vaccination if you take these medications. But Dr. Marion Michaels, a member of the University of Pittsburgh Medical Center's COVID-19 Vaccine Advisory Committee, says studies have shown the immune system responds differently to the COVID-19 vaccine than it does to natural infection. We believe that the immune response to the vaccine is actually a better response than the wild-type virus with COVID-19, said Michaels, who is a pediatric infectious disease physician at UPMC Children's Hospital of Pittsburgh. For that very reason, even if someone who has had the infection in the past, we recommend that people still receive the vaccine. One 2016 study from Duke University looked at the effectiveness of various vaccines among children and found that those who took pain relievers before getting their regularly scheduled shots had fewer antibodies than those who didn't. But the few studies that exist on pain relievers and vaccines are not robust enough to draw conclusions, experts say, as the children in the 2016 study who took pain relievers and showed fewer antibodies still had a sufficient immune response to provide protection. There's no data that shows a reduced immune response if the medications are taken after getting the vaccine to treat side effects, Kelly said. It's perfectly fine to take NSAIDs or Tylenol if you are feeling unwell after vaccination, Kelly said. The symptoms you are experiencing indicate your immune system is functioning normally, and that the immune response is ongoing. And here's a story that relates to that statement. This is from the Austin American Statesman. Here's why COVID-19 vaccine side effects are a sign your body is working, by Nicole Villapando, Austin American Statesman, published January 28th. Have you been thinking, yes, I want to get a COVID-19 vaccine, but what about the side effects? Those side effects could actually be a good thing. Side effects are the body's immune system working, says Dr. Brian Metzger, Medical Director of Infectious Diseases at St. David's Medical Center. It's a sign that your body is working to respond to this and make the antibodies and make the T cells that will respond to the actual coronavirus if you ever encounter it in the future, Metzger says. The vaccine allows your body to recognize the coronavirus and know what it needs to do to fight it. The Pfizer and Moderna vaccines use mRNA to train your cells to make just the spike protein of the coronavirus, and that's what the body reacts to. Most of the symptoms experienced by people in the vaccine studies and afterward have been sore arms and fatigue. Some people have had fever lasting 24 hours to 48 hours. The symptoms tend to be felt more in people who are younger, Metzger says, because their immune systems are more robust than people who are 65 or older. If you don't have any symptoms after the first or second shot, do not interpret it as the body and the vaccine are not working. The vast majority of people don't have any effects from the vaccine other than soreness of the arm and fatigue. Some people don't feel anything, Metzger says. The symptoms tend to be worse after the second shot, and that makes sense to Metzger. Between the first and second shot, your body has already started to respond and make antibodies and T cells that start to respond to the real coronavirus, he says. The second shot, your body tries to defend more briskly. It's already developed the tools. With the first shot, Metzger says, health experts think people have about a 50% protection level against the virus. The second shot allows them to get to a 95% protection level. It takes about a week to 14 days after the second shot to get to that level of protection. That doesn't mean that 2 weeks after the second shot, people can stop wearing masks and social distancing. We still don't know whether you can still get infected with coronavirus and develop a brief infection, but be asymptomatic, Metzger says. There could be a time where the virus is replicated until the time your body is able to recognize, attack, and get rid of the virus. You're highly unlikely to get symptomatic or severe COVID-19, but you could still possibly transmit it. People might be wondering whether there is an advantage with one vaccine versus the other. The best coronavirus vaccine is the one you are offered, Metzger says, because both the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines have the same mRNA mechanism and similar efficacy rates, it's not much of an issue which one you get. There is some thinking that if one vaccine isn't available for a second shot, you could get a second dose using the other one, though that is not preferred. The time between injections should be 3 to 4 weeks, but the CDC has said that time can be up to 6 weeks. You probably do not need to start over again, even if it's longer than that, Metzger says. What will be interesting is what happens with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which is expected to reach the FDA in February. It is one shot and made in a different way with a different efficacy rate. That might make people think differently about which vaccine to choose. The research on current vaccines is ongoing. Most of the tens of thousands of people in the Moderna or Pfizer trials who received the actual vaccines are starting to hit the six-month mark since their second injections. They are being tested for 2 years for antibodies to see just how long these vaccines last, as well as if these shots continue to work against different variations, such as the ones tied to the United Kingdom, Brazil, and South Africa. At some point, as more studies are done, we will know if people will need booster shots in addition to the initial vaccines, Metzger says. The ultimate goals of the vaccine is to remove the risk of severe disease and get back to a normal society, Metzger says. There's this thing that's protecting you from getting COVID-19. That's what it's all about. Sign me up. And now, here's an article from CNN Health. COVID-19 masks, which mask is best for you and when to use it, by Sandy Lamott, published January 25th. Think of masks as the newest trendy accessory that can save your life and the lives of those who you love. But instead of what pattern, logo, or slogan you display, choose your mask based on its effectiveness against the deadly coronavirus in the environment you are in. Guidelines on how to help you make that choice should be out by mid-spring, according to Jonathan Salzlada, deputy director at the National Personal Protective Technology Laboratory, which is part of the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health at the Centers for U.S. Disease Control and Prevention. Working closely with government agencies, industry stakeholders, and ASTM International, an international technical standards organization, the standards will apply to filter efficiency, sizing and fit, cleaning, and recommended period of use or reuse. For now, here's a breakdown of respirators and masks based on current scientific knowledge and what experts are saying on how to best use them. N95 type masks, made with fibers woven with an electrical charge that can trap errant particles, like a sock that sticks to your pants in the dryer, studies have shown N95 type respirators are currently the top of the line when it comes to filtering large and small particles. Masks in this category are also known as filtering facepiece respirators or disposable respirators. What would happen if every American wore an N95 type mask for 4 weeks in risky settings like being indoors? It would stop the epidemic. Dr. Abrar Karen, an internal medicine physician at Brigham and Women's Hospitals and Harvard Medical School, told CNN chief medical correspondent Dr. Sanjay Gupta. N95 respirators come in many sizes to accommodate various face shapes. When fitted to the wearer's face and worn properly, N95 type masks can trap 95% of particles around 0.3 microns, studies have shown. SARS-CoV-2 can be as small as 0.1 micron in diameter. That's about 4 millionths of an inch. While it may seem that N95 filters would miss the tiny COVID particles, that's not so. Most bits of virus exit the lungs encased inside larger respiratory droplets, typically much bigger than 0.3 microns. Even those that become aerosolized are easily captured. Due to a natural phenomenon called Brownian motion, such minute particles don't travel in straight lines. Instead, they bounce around in a zigzag fashion and are easily caught in the N95's electrostatic filter. While some experts are calling for a nationwide rollout of N95 masks, such masks are currently reserved for healthcare professionals on the front lines of caring for COVID-19 patients. That's partly due to a shortage of such masks, which are designed to be worn once and discarded, but also due to the training needed to fit and wear the mask properly. In a healthcare setting, there's an advantage because there's a degree of sophisticated training to inform people how to properly wear respirators, which doesn't exist in a public setting, NPPTL's Salzada said. According to the CDC, a few other respirators also meet or exceed the 95% efficacy level. The N99, the N100, R95, R99, R100, P95, P99, and P100 masks. Some of these devices, which can look like gas masks, have received an emergency use authorization and can be used in non-surgical settings during shortages of N95 masks. The N95 masks and its sisters and brothers are best fitted to a person's unique facial contours on a bare face to keep the seal tight. Then the mask must be worn properly, despite the fact that such high filtration can make breathing more difficult. N95 type masks have a much higher breathing resistance than simple surgical or fabric masks. I've seen people with a full beard wearing the N95. Or they're wearing the 95 upside down, or they just have it over their mouth and not their nose and mouth, because it's easier to breathe when you're not covering your nose, Salzlada said. Note, beware of N95 masks with exhalation valves in them, because those valves put the airflow back into the environment. Also, beware of knockoff N95s being sold on the internet and at some commercial stores. The CDC's NIOSH lists dozens of counterfeit masks being sold as N95 or NIOSH approved masks on its website and offers the following advice on how to be sure you are not buying a fraudulent product. NIOSH approved respirators carry an approval label on or within the packaging of the respirator and on the mask itself. NIOSH approved respirators will always have one of the following designations: N95, N99, N100, R95, R99, R100, P95, P99, or P100. You can verify the approval number on the agency's equipment list or trusted source page to determine if the respirator has been approved by NIOSH. Europe's FFP2. In response to the spread of new and more contagious variants of the coronavirus, some European countries are mandating the use of FFP1 and FFP2 masks, which stand for filtering face piece respirator. Note, the P means the mask is strongly resistant to oil and can be used to protect against non-oily and oily aerosols. In comparison, the N on the N95 means the mask is not resistant to oil and can't be used in an oil droplet environment, such as drilling for oil. An FFP1 filter has a minimum filtration efficiency of 80%, and FFP2 is 94% effective, and an FFP3 is 99% effective against airborne infectious diseases. Last week, the German state of Bavaria mandated that citizens use the FFP2 masks when shopping in stores and traveling on public transport. The German government then followed that lead, requiring everyone in the country to wear either FFP1 or FFP2 masks while at work, in shops, or traveling on public transport. France is also requiring citizens to leave homemade masks behind. Now, single-use surgical FFP1 masks and more protective FFP2 filtering facepiece respirators are required in all public places. France is also allowing people to use commercial fabric masks certified to filter 90% of particles greater than or equal to 3 microns. Citizens are told to look for the filtration guarantee logo when buying such masks. KN95 and similar filtering facepiece respirators. The KN95 masks, which are certified via Chinese standards, also filter out and capture 95% of 0.3 micron particles, but there are differences. Filter layers of N95 respirators were 8-fold thicker and had 2-fold higher dipole charge density than that of KN95 respirators, a study in December found. These KN95 masks are not certified by the U.S. National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, but a few manufacturers of KN95 masks have been given emergency use approval to be used in healthcare settings in the U.S. The company, 3M, which makes many filtering facepiece respirators, put out a document comparing N95 and European FFP2 respirators to the Chinese KN95, the Australia New Zealand P2, the Korean First Class, and the Japanese DS2, and found all of them similar in regard to filtering non-oil-based particles, such as those resulting from wildfires. PM, small particle, 2.5 air pollution, volcanic eruptions, or bioaerosols, such as viruses. However, prior to selecting a respirator, the 3M document said, users should consult their local respiratory protection regulations and requirements or check with their local public health authorities for selection guidance. Surgical-grade masks. Designed to be used by surgeons and other healthcare professionals, surgical-grade masks are loose-fitting, disposable devices meant to help block large particle droplets, splashes, sprays, or splatter that may contain germs, such as viruses and bacteria, keeping it from reaching your mouth and nose, according to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. They do not filter or block very small particles in the air that may be transmitted by coughs, sneezes, or certain medical procedures, the FDA stressed. Surgical masks weren't meant to perform the functions of the respirator, said NPPTL's Salzada. They're not intended to be protection from inhalation particles, but from contact with body fluids. True medical-grade masks are made of three layers of non-woven fabric, typically made from plastic. The colored top layer of fabric is made of medical-grade spun-bound polypropylene, which is a resin polymer heat-bonded into a web-like structure. Surgical masks also have small bendable wires to help the mask stay in place and are often tied behind the head or secured with ear ties. This design doesn't make for a particularly great fit, especially compared to the N95, according to Salzada. Surgical masks are one-time use only, and if they are soiled or breathing becomes difficult, the mask should be carefully discarded and replaced, the FDA said. Homemade cloth masks. The most common mask in use among the general public today is a fabric mask, often homemade. Effectiveness depends on the type of fabric used and the number of layers of cloth. These masks can be as little as 26% effective. According to the CDC, multiple layers of cloth with higher thread counts have demonstrated superior performance compared to single layers of cloth with lower thread counts, in some cases filtering nearly 50% of fine particles less than 1 micron. That's good news. Studies have detected SARS-CoV-2 in aerosols between 1 and 4 microns. A study published last September examined the ability of cotton, polyester, and silk to repel moisture when used in masks or as mask inserts. We found that silk face coverings repel droplets in spray tests, as well as disposable single-use surgical masks, the authors wrote, adding that silk masks can be more breathable than other fabrics that trap humidity and are reusable through cleaning. Whatever the fabric, look for a tight weave, according to studies. Use the light test to check the weave. If you can easily see the outline of the individual fibers when you hold up the mask to the light, it's not likely to be effective. You can also add filters to your fabric mask, according to the CDC. Some are made from polypropylene, the plastic that produces static cling, others from silver or copper, which have antimicrobial properties. Studies on the effectiveness of inserts, however, are rare, so guidance is limited. To up their odds, people have begun layering fabric masks over surgical ones for added protection. President Joseph Biden has been seen wearing two masks on numerous occasions. On Inauguration Day, Transportation Secretary nominee Pete Buttigieg and his husband, Cheston Glessman, took a selfie double masking, and inaugural poet Amanda Gorman wore a surgical mask underneath her Prada version. It's a behavior advocated by Joseph Allen, an associate professor at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health and the director of the school's Healthy Buildings Program. A surgical mask with a cloth mask on top of it can get you over 91% removal efficiency for particles, Allen recently told Dr. Gupta's team. It makes good sense to double mask, according to Dr. Anthony Fauci, now chief medical advisor to Biden. If you have a physical covering with one layer, you put another layer on. It just makes common sense that it likely would be more effective, and that's the reason you see people either double masking or doing a version of an N95, Fauci told NBC's Savannah Guthrie. But pay attention to fit on any mask, Allen told CNN last fall. You want the mask to go over the bridge of the nose, below the chin, and be flush on the face, resting along the skin. Face shields, bandanas, gaiters, ski masks, and scarves. Certain items fail to protect a sufficient barrier against COVID-19 and other viruses and should not be worn as a means of significant protection, according to the CDC. Don't wear scarves or knitted ski masks as a protective measure, the CDC says. Do not wear a face shield without a mask, the agency advises, as it won't protect you against tiny airborne droplets that can float under and inside the shield. And forget bandanas and neck gaiters. A 2020 study by Duke University looked at 14 commonly available face coverings. Not surprisingly, the fitted N95 was judged the most effective, followed by three-layer surgical masks. But the study found folded bandanas, knitted masks, and neck gaiters did not offer much protection at all. In fact, gaiter masks, known as neck fleeces, actually increased the transmission of respiratory droplets. And we are running a bit long today. I'm going to go ahead and read a final story for you. This is from the Austin American Statesman. Millions of COVID-19 survivors have lost the sense of smell and taste. Will they come back? Not even researchers know. By Grace Hawk, USA Today, published January 31st. Eldemira Rivera was lying on her bed with her husband and 16-month-old son selecting a movie when she heard a loud bang outside their home in Waco, Texas. Then her sister screamed fire. "I dropped everything and just grabbed my son and his blanket," said Rivera, 22. "I could not smell anything. I was so shocked to see the fire at the front door." Rivera tested positive for COVID-19 and lost her sense of smell on January 14th. Early the next morning, a fire broke out on the other side of her bedroom wall, less than a foot from where she was lying. But Rivera couldn't smell it, nor could the family of four who was staying with them. Her sister, Bianca Rivera, 19, smelled something burning from the other side of the house, initially thinking her sister had burned popcorn in the kitchen. When she smelled burning plastic, Rivera walked out of her room and saw smoke in the hallway, quickly ushering seven people and three dogs out of the home before fire consumed it. Like Rivera, millions of people worldwide have suffered changes to their sense of smell or taste after contracting COVID-19. In most cases, the symptoms usually only last a few weeks. But a year into the pandemic, researchers still aren't sure when some COVID-19 survivors may get their senses back, if ever, and many are struggling with the long-term safety, hygiene, and psychiatric implications of the loss. As the pandemic has rolled on, we've gotten a better idea about the long-term chronic effects of COVID on smell and taste, said Dr. Jay Picarillo, an ENT and professor at the Washington University School of Medicine who studies the topic. "The things we've learned suggest that most people recover smell and taste, but not all. A million new survivors with chronically diminished senses? In the coming year, there will be at least a million new cases of people in the U.S. with chronically diminished senses of smell or taste due to COVID-19, Picarillo predicts. Studies suggest up to 80% of people who have COVID-19 symptoms experience smell or taste dysfunction with a significant association between the two senses. Some experience reduced ability to smell or taste. Some have a complete loss, and some experience distorted senses where certain tastes and smells change or become unpleasant, an increasingly common outcome called parosmia. Dr. Evan Ryder, an ENT and professor at Virginia Commonwealth University who studies the issue, said he's seeing similar rates of patients reporting dysfunction with smell as with taste. "In general, anytime you're eating something, it hits the taste buds in your mouth, and you're smelling the vapors in your food at the same time. So your brain puts it all together to determine how you perceive the taste of food," Ryder said. Most people regain their senses within a few weeks, but approximately 5 to 10% will continue to have symptoms after 6 months, Picarillo said. "At that point, they may not ever return," he said. Scientists have studied since the early days of the pandemic that smell-taste disturbance is associated with milder cases of COVID-19 and with cases in younger people. A study published earlier this month in the Journal of Internal Medicine reinforced the conclusions. Among more than 2,500 COVID-19 patients at 18 European hospitals in the study, more than 74% self-reported a distorted sense of smell and 46% a distorted sense of taste. The vast majority of both categories were younger patients and those with milder cases. The good news is that more than half of the patients with smell distortions saw their symptoms disappear within a month, rising to 95% of patients by 6 months, according to the study. For those remaining 5%, the future remains unclear. Dr. Pam Dalton, a researcher at the Monell Chemical Synthesis Center in Philadelphia, said patients should not give up hope. Some people who have lost their sense of smell due to rhinoviruses, which cause common colds, have regained the sense after several years, she said. There's evidence from other viruses that may disrupt the system in different ways that recovery can occur after 6 months, Dalton said. There isn't a cutoff beyond which all hope should be abandoned. It can be depressing and upsetting. Loss of smell or taste can have a severe impact on quality of life and make it harder to identify dangers in the environment, such as gas leaks or spoiled food, experts say. For professions that rely on their senses, loss of smell or taste can be career-ending. It can alter relationships, degrade mental health, and result in severe weight loss or gain. New York City resident Liz Stern, 46, said she gained 30 pounds since she lost her senses of smell and taste in late March when she had a mild case of COVID-19 for 6 weeks. She's too fatigued to exercise, and she eats a lot of carbs because she likes the way they feel in her mouth. Stern said she has identified a dozen foods that she can still taste, and she goes to the same pickle shop every week to stock up on a variety of flavors. Last month, Stern smelled an orange again for the first time and started crying. And a few weeks ago, she got a whiff of a cookie when she walked past a bakery. It can be depressing and upsetting, Stern said. Everything to me just tastes gross, but I'm not going to let that get me down, now or ever. I'm here, so many people didn't survive this beast. Stern said her family is in the process of moving apartments and she plans to set up smoke and gas detectors in the new home right away. It's very scary, Stern said. If there's a leak, I can't smell it. Many patients who lose their sense of smell or taste also struggle with social anxiety and hygiene concerns, experts said. Picarillo said patients often report wishing they knew when their child's diaper needed to be changed and when they may unknowingly be subjecting friends or family to a foul smell. People will report never wearing an item of clothing more than once because they're afraid it might smell of their body odor and they can't detect it. And the same thing goes with a lot of different